Hey, you got the morning show with Aaron. That is Taisha Tari with Karanga. And in the studio, I'd like to welcome Ngarono Renata. Good morning.
Atamari e te whānau, whānui o whaingaro and beyond.
Kia ora. So we have the Kairongoa segments and today's topic. Do we have a topic or have we got several topics?
I think we'll go with the flow of the day. It's we're on a rising moon. We're going towards Te Ihu o Hine Raumati, which is that event or that time of the year which is known as the summer solstice.
On Friday, according to some.
Yeah, when Thursday, Friday, those hours. Hours that timing.
Apparently the length of the day, for those who care about those things, the difference between the 2 days is like a split second.
Similar. It's really important to understand perhaps what the significance of those, that timing is, because of what's happening outside of the house or in the sky in Ranginui at that time, and what that means to the way that the earth in the southern hemisphere. So the earth is warming up because of the presence of Tamanui Te Rā, which has a significant impact on both the hemispheres, but because it's coming closer to the earth, then the heat in the earth increases. And that's a very significant tohu sign for those of us who put our hands in the earth to grow the significant crops for our community hapuri. Busy time of the year.
Yes, but are you saying traditionally it was a busy time of year, or it's a busy time of year, or is it both, but for different reasons?
The import of what we call Christmas is obviously come from the Northern Hemisphere, and the storylines associated with that, the whakapapa associated with that, come from the Northern Hemisphere. So they've filtered down and fused very much into our society and also into the way we gather together, the way we share time. And of course, we were talking earlier about the giving of presents, which had originally, with that kaupapa of Christmas, quite a sacred meaning. The giving of gifts to the arrival of Christ.
Now people would describe the experience of Christmas shopping as quite a profane experience, like the opposite of sacred.
I think it's definitely had quite a significant impact on all of us, of either we have already done this this part of our journey called Christmas shopping, and we've got the list of who we want to include in that and what those gifts are and what they look like, and they're all wrapped up. And then you have quite a significant part of our community who are probably really stressed right now, not quite thinking, well, they're worried about who they haven't got presents for, and the pressure. What did we call it?
The shopping conspiracy.
The shopping conspiracy.
Yes.
It's very real.
But it's a conspiracy without a conspirator behind it. It's like no one's in control, but everyone feels forced to participate.
I understand, and because I've never actually visually been part of it, but it's the day after Christmas, which is very important, because in the buying conspiracy, that's when you should do your shopping, and that's when the frenzy.
That's the even weirdest part of it. It's like it's a big preparation leading up to the day of the presents and lots of shopping, and then the next day, more shopping.
Not only more shopping, people are waiting for the shops to open. And literally, they're buying more than they did before Christmas. So those timings have really been imported into our lifestyle. But for Indigenous mana whenua, this time of the year wouldn't have been even considered. It was too busy with the crops and the land and the preparation towards harvest, because even the harvesting is continuing. Hauhaki, so which the harvests are beginning to come in, and who's going to harvest the crops if you're
Christmas shopping.
Holidaying, Christmas shopping.
Yeah.
And you miss that whole, you literally miss that whole cycle of all the hard work leading up to this time of the year, Hine Raumati, the summer months, where the more watering is required, more attention to irrigation, some weeding because of the heat, the extraordinary weather patterns that we are experiencing, and dealing with that, because you still need these crops to come through and have a decent harvest. And you can't do that when you're not paying attention.
Yeah. And we forget in this modern world where food arrives by trucks how important the growing and the harvest was. Like, it's a matter of life and death.
I think, yeah. Well, actually, some very recent experiences, I went into Wānanga with a swarm of bees that arrived at our home.
Yeah.
And what I was to learn over the duration that they hung out around the house, because I had no idea what to do, and sending messages out on our regular notice board about the bees, what is possible. And I learned this incredible story about everything is to do with the queen, the puhi, everything. It's her survival that ensures that the hive can actually grow and flourish. And of course, she was there. I mean, they were there in their thousands. So during that time, our neighbour, who is a beekeeper, over a period of about 4 days, actually began to educate us, myself, very much about the survival of the queen and her and the bees, the honeybees and the drones. And I was just amazed, and collecting them, to collect them later in the evening when they're quieter. But because of the time of year that they were swarming, they were also considered, I didn't get stung at all. They're not interested in you. They're too busy doing their work.
Right.
What are they doing? And it was fascinating. So, yes, it was a very successful transition from their temporary home inside the, not the ceiling, but the floor. We had to take out the boards.
Of your house?
Yes.
Successful for them.
Very successful story all round. And what I really wanted to share from that story was how important bees are to our survival.
Yeah.
If we don't have bees, there's a huge link missing between our survival. We need the bees. The bees are extraordinarily important to our life on the earth.
The pollinators.
I know. It was just a beautiful story of okay, you've come to teach me. I'm going into Wānanga with you. Originally, we were told that there were, because part of the house is brick and they have these breathers, which are holes in the brick periodically, to block them up and kill the swarm. Yeah, that wasn't going to happen.
Most of us should know by now that we're having trouble with our bees, that there's...
Really?
Well, yeah. They don't survive as well as they used to.
Oh.
At the moment. And I'm not an expert and I can't really go into any detail. But that is an issue that many who know what they're talking about are concerned about.
Yeah. So there was this very conscious effort for her survival, and the hive, what I understood from Andy, who carried the hive down from the ladder, because they were climbing on ladders, he and our neighbour, He said it was very heavy. He said there was thousands of bees that were had obviously wanted to live at our house.
They found a good spot. So did your neighbour have a human-built hive,
yes,
a place for the hive
yes,
to go?
Yes, he had beautiful apartments for the bees.
Multi-story living.
Even got the lowdown to a couple of days ago that the bees that he got from home were doing much better than his own.
That's good.
making lots of sweet honey.
So, but someone had you received some advice somewhere that you should just kill them if they're in the wall.
Yes, the beekeepers. A couple of beekeepers. That's what they advised. That wasn't going to happen. I said no. We need to find a compassionate beekeeper who understands why they're here, and rehouse them.
So I've just been Craig, who's our farming guy, said varroa mite and glyphosate are affecting bees like Roundup.
Oh, okay. Glyphosate?
Glyphosate.
Yeah. I know that word. I haven't visually seen it, but that glyphosate is still very present and people are still continuing to use it. They call it weed control, weed busters, who go in and, you know, basically we identify that you're the weed, therefore you need to be exterminated. Is that the right word? Probably not.
It does a job. It gets a message across, because that's what's happening.
And I think that's a very cruel methodology. It's like colonising. It's a colonising way of thinking. Some of these things can actually harmonise if we have enough people sitting around who understand the life of that plant, which is in the wrong place, and then the life of the original plants, which are best suited to that environment, and how to negotiate their diminishing them their life. But to go and outright use herbicides, dare I say that word, you see it, written up in black and white in the paper, that they're using herbicides, for goodness sake. What does that mean? They're killing with herbs. They're not herbs.
They're killing the herbs.
Yeah, they're killing the herbs. There's nothing herbal remedy about this killing of...
So from your perspective as someone who works with herbal remedies, this whole word is a...
Oh, it's dangerous.
A calamitous word.
It's dangerous very dangerous word. To the field of those who practice the collection of non-Indigenous plants or endemic, that are non-endemic to the country, and those that are exotic plants, and they share a platform where they make medicine and they mix even the two to get the many of them together to make this extraordinary rongoā. It's not as simple as like using glyphosate. So I totally disagree with that perspective and that way of dealing with the problem. The problem is far.
We have to keep the concrete path clean of grass. That's very important. And it's very easy. It's very easy to do with poisons. But you can see when you walk around town, you can see the people who regularly use things like glyphosate.
Really?
Well, because
identify them.
Well, not them by what they look like. They're all hunched over. No, the piece of ground next to the concrete path is hunched over. If you walk along the main street and you look at around the driveway and the footpath next to that house, if they're using herbicide to keep the grass down so it doesn't grow over the footpath, you'll see. I'm thinking of a house in particular, I won't say where it is, where there's a 10-centimeter strip of just bare earth, and the earth is sunken down as well because it kills all the life in the soil, even though it was advertised as not doing that. It was supposed to. You always heard people say 20 years ago, they say, Roundup gets neutralized when it touches the soil. Well, it turned out not to be the case. It neutralized the life in the soil. So you can see it. You can see the places where they use it a lot because there'll be dead earth, a strip of dead earth next to the concrete.
Yes, and no vitality.
Protecting the concrete.
Yes.
From the grass.
Yes. Yeah. So that humans don't get to have a relationship with those pesty weeds.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a sad day for us in that regard, the way that we are treating those particular issues, kaupapa, that have come forward very clearly. You know, I mean, the bigger picture is that there's far too many big farms.
Oh, you want to go there now?
No. No, I don't. But, you know, and then that has, over 200 years of the types of activities that have gone on, well, we're in a very dangerous situation with
If I think about the keeping the path clean, like you have to keep the path clean and the concrete clean because you don't want people to think that you're untidy. Like that's kind of, I mean, slightly sarcastic there, but I think that's the truth of it, that or we like tidiness or we don't want people to think our place is untidy.
Mm.
Either way, it's an issue to do with tidiness, which is a concept that's not got anything to do with the natural world, but we're applying it to our lives and we end up poisoning plants and controlling plants.
Yeah, actually, which brings me to a point around the actual growing, which is, you know, the other side, which is there is actually a very active kaupapa, which is called food security, which is about the growing of crops on land that would be probably farmland. It is farmland, and it's being transformed by a hearty group of gardeners who desire to work together, so kotahitanga, want to work together. And the interesting enough that the particular herb that's dominating the field, yes, that's right, I heard you, it's called dock.
Right, who's been telling you about dock?
Well, everyone, and that's what we're digging out to make room. However,
we have to get rid of the dock.
Yes, yes.
But you're about to tell us something else.
Yes, I'm about to tell you, it's called runa, and pai whenua, they're Māori names, and they do have beautiful botanical names, which I'm not going to pronounce.
Fair enough, I wouldn't either.
So the dock. So pai whenua is used in the treatment of skin diseases such as psoriasis, eczema, and skin infections. Amazing.
Mm. Because it was called dock, I thought it was another imported weed. But
there is a native dock.
There's a native dock, so it's endemic or native to.
Yeah, and well,
New
I mean,
Zealand.
Dock. When you look at it, actually, the way that it grows, there are some extraordinary benefits. But no, we remove all the dock as much as we can with our fabulous tools to prepare a garden bed. This is a collective project, so it's really interesting.
I wonder if it's like a lot of the times because our farms have for the last few decades been monocultures, and a lot of the things that are called weeds are there to try to repair the soil. If dock is having some kind of effect like that on the soil, like it's beneficial to the soil in some way, it's just a question pops into my head.
Yeah, well, I mean, that relationship of balance has, we're in an extraordinary situation of imbalance.
Mm.
So when we
go
onto this land, you know, under an agreement, an MOU,
A memorandum of understanding.
Yeah, this is really, you know, we've formalised it into that under the leadership of one of our people from the Environment Centre, Tania, and I hope she doesn't mind me saying her name. It's an amazing experience to be on a piece of land that you don't own. You know, you don't own the land at all. And the generosity of those who are wanting this kaupapa to unfold on their whenua, and we collectively use our gardening tools to then prepare the land for huge crops. The particular crops that have been chosen are kumara.
So are you talking about the community garden?
No.
Oh, somewhere else. Okay.
Yeah, no.
Not the one down Wainera Street.
This is down at Te Uku.
Oh, okay.
Out at Ōkete?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's currently, it's been planted. We've planted hundreds of tipu kumara that were gifted by Liz and Rick from their gardening. And so then you also, what you have in this situation is expertise from everyone. Everyone that is there has an incredible amount of mātauranga, knowledge to offer back, because some we've forgotten some things. We've forgotten a lot of things. Mm. So when you work collectively like this under food security, then you have an opportunity to grow in your knowledge of growing organically too. Yeah. So it's an organically based, and yeah. taking care of that collectively is amazing, amazing experience.
So what would you do with the dock then?
I don't actually, to be honest, I don't know what they did with the dock.
No, what would you do? What would you do?
The dock, well, in this situation, I think the preparation to take it aside, but first of all, I don't know what the land was before, so yeah. I haven't done any, given I haven't done any research, I don't know if the land was originally organic. I don't know. I have that information.
Yeah, or how healthy the soil is.
No. Yeah. All I know is that it's at this point it's been gifted. But over time, as we use it and we import our goodness into this organic gardening methodology, food security, then you know, we're obviously regenerating the soil in a much more significant way. So it can be replanted each year.
Mm.
And also the following the maramataka, the cycles as a collective, so we can share those that mātauranga back to our own communities, because they're not only coming from our own homes. The Hākia people, Dan, he comes yeah. in from Hākia, and you know that's a community of people, so that goes back out there. Shared knowledge, it's got to be good for us. It's a healthy way of interacting.
So generally for your rongoa, do you grow plants specifically like at your house to use,
really,
or do
question.
Or do you prefer wild foraging?
That's a really good question. One of the things I learned very earlier on was that you are given permission to, if you're not in your own tribal area,
yeah.
and even if you're in your own tribal area, that you really don't have, you seek, it's a type of permission from mana whenua, like on the mountain, on Kariwai. I would never have harvested from there without the blessing.
Yeah.
Yes, it's not the permission, it's the blessing of the people. Because if anyone knows that maunga, it's mana whenua,
yeah.
which are the people who've been here for hundreds of years, if not thousands. They may not be the loudest to advocate for her survival or her life story. Generally, we aren't. We're not the ones who, you know, but we are always aware of what's going on Kariwai, but they know what's growing there. And so I was given the blessing of mana whenua to harvest because of my practice. My practice became known, like, oh, she's harvesting for us.
Yeah. For medicine.
Yeah, for medicine. So yeah. There was no secret. I was transparent. And mana whenua like that.
Of course.
They love transparency, you know?
Yeah.
It really resonates with that genuine relationship. So, I can harvest if I choose to.
Do you plant plants at your house?
Yes.
To harvest?
Yes, I do. Yeah. I harvest very much from around the home as a significant māra of rungoa for eating and for making medicines from.
Does the state of the soil, the health of the soil, affect the effectiveness of the medicine?
What is important that I have noticed over the duration of this practice of harvesting and making medicine is there's a certain potency that comes from particular plants that you're bringing in to make smaller batches, which is what I do. I prefer to do that, is the potency. I can pretty much at this point in my experience guarantee I'll go, that's potent. But that's a number of factors. That's not only the potency of the plant which it comes from, but that's to do with the time I harvested.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the time of the year, the time of the month, and that, you know, it's not like I'm putting it under a microscope and going, oh, wow, that's got this in it, and therefore, it's my experience has taught me about potency of medicine. And at this time of that preparation, I'm very much into the potency of rungoa. I can, you know, pretty much guarantee. And if you want to test it scientifically with Western science, that's fine. I'm good with that. But
it's very expensive to do that.
Yeah, probably to try and prove me wrong, which is okay too. I'm okay with that. I still maintain that I know that what that will do. I can guarantee when I send it out or gift it out or however it's received that it will do what I've understood. Yeah.
How long does it take to get to the point where you're confident about things like that? Like, how long is that apprenticeship?
All your life.
Okay.
You never really stop learning, and that's the beauty too of being able to receive knowledge. And then also infusing that knowledge into your practice. Over a period of time, you refine what you do and you become more disciplined. So the discipline of when you make medicine, there's many aspects that contribute to the way the rungoa serves the community that you're in. And I work on those many elemental parts of that storyline to do so over a duration of time. The repetition of something, so making it again and again,
yeah,
and refining, but it's a discipline. So what I mean by discipline is, actually a friend was visiting and it's quite rare for someone to see me make medicine,
okay,
but I had to make it. And he was, if you like, it was more of a social environment for me.
Yeah.
Because I was also talking with my friend. And what I realized was, because he sent me a message after he'd left, and he said, that was amazing. He said, what I witnessed. And I said, oh, what, me making medicine? I said, there's normally no one around. Said so. He says, but I know now how much aroha and attention you pay to the rungoa. I said, okay. So he was, yeah, it's not something I'm, unless I'm teaching that,
yeah,
part of the practice. But if I'm actually the practitioner preparing it, I'm not really keen on having social environment, and it doesn't suit me. I can't concentrate as well.
Yeah, you split your focus.
Yeah, that would be how I would sense it. So I'm quite, it's important to pay attention to something that seems so simple. And you know, it's like chefing, isn't it? In a sense, you know, and although chefs do like to show off.
It's a very important to part of the job. I've worked in a kitchen as a kitchen hand, so
it's more about the you know, the taste of that medicine that you eat. That's medicine.
Actually,
let food be your medicine, let medicine be your food. I've tasted that.
That's actually a really good comparison, because we all know that there's a recipe, there's a formula, but in the hands of an expert chef, somehow they put the same things together in a way that's better than I would have done. right? An expert chef.
Is it really better than you?
Well, because I'm not a very good cook. I'm just like I'm representing the normal people here, the unskilled.
The normal people.
The unskilled people. The unskilled cooks. I'm representing the unskilled cooks.
That's very true.
I could follow the recipe, but it would not turn out the same way that an experienced chef would do. And I think that's a good comparison for understand what you're doing when you're making the medicine.
And the other thing,
because I could knock all that stuff together too, but
you
it might not
knock
turn.
It together.
Well, that's what
yeah.
I mean, right? In a very mechanical way, but I would somehow miss something.
Yeah, you know, that's so true, you know. I make a lemon juice, a drink, a particular lemon juice that I enjoy making. And Tuya, who's 2 years old, whenever she comes over, and she's coming over today,
yep.
And I have no lemon ice blocks in the fridge for her, freezer, she will literally say, "Hi, Nana," and go straight to the freezer. It's so simple, and yet there's something about that lemon ice block that I make that's what she's come over for, all the way from Kirikiriroa. "Hi, Nana," and straight to the freezer. And that tells me something. That tells me, you know, oh, you want the simple ice block, very simple, but the lemons, the simplicity of what I've made works. The taste, I know the taste. I go, "Oh yeah, she'll like that." Pour it in, put it in the freezer, little lemon ice blocks.
So sense of taste not being spoiled by too much sugary food yet.
Yeah. It's got no numbers.
I tell you, it reminded me of something when my kids were little, like, I don't know, 5, 6, or 7, something like that, and like seasonal fruit would come around, like feed jars. Someone would come around with a bag of feed jars because they just arrived harvest time, and the kids would just devour like 20 or 30 of them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And like their body wants something and they're still in tune with that message.
Oh, yes, yes. It's another way of practicing rongoa.
Yeah.
Is generally if there's something that you have an abundance of but you eat a significant amount of it, you know, you really partake of that food, then it's likely that whatever that's got in it, those ingredients, and, you know, I hope that if it can be organic, that would be beautiful.
Mm.
Then what you've got is you're really taking those the mineral content, the vitamin content of the fruit, and you don't need to go to Mr. Google to figure that out. Just know that they really need that. This is what they want. It's not only what they want; it's what they need. And we have almost, I would say, lost touch with that for ourselves. We don't self. What's the word? We don't understand that's actually what's happening. That's why we're eating so much of this particular food. Or maybe you just really enjoy them when they're coming in the house.
Well, that's a sign if you're really enjoying it. Like, I sometimes feel like that about fruit at times. Like, this is something I must have. You know, it's like my body's like, yes.
Yeah, and it resonates with it. So it's taking all the goodness that it needs, and then you'll stop.
Mm.
Then you'll stop, you know. You'll share the last mango.
So I've just had a message from Craig who's trying to get some free medical advice from you.
Oh,
yeah. Any wrong eye for osteoarthritis? Sorry, Craig.
Oh, so we're probably talking, he may know of the horopito.
Yeah.
Have I got it here? I just want to get this one right because horopito is a really important plant. It's.
Yeah, I don't know, it has a few cards with various plants on it, including presumably one of them was Doc, which we were talking about earlier. Oh, you've got the whole collection.
I do. Well, this is a smaller collection that I carry around. But the horopito, if you can get that in a tincture form, is really important for the joints. But that's There's a lot of pain associated with horopito is called the pepper tree.
Right.
So it has that. It has a significantly improve the situation within the joint systems, so you have a sense of relief, mainly from the inflammation that comes about with that condition or those types of conditions. It's the inflammation which creates pressure around the body, and then of course when you go to move, it's much worse. So horopito is the one I would, in a tincture form, and if you can obtain the cream, but a really high quality cream. I'm not sure if we'll eat it, but that's what I would work with, is horopito to assist as one of the ingredients. I'm hoping that's helpful. That's helpful. Who's what have we got?
Kia ora, he says.
Oh,
So folks, we're talking to Ngaronoa Renata, and it's our Kairongoa segment. And we did start off talking about the time of year and what's happening to us with the
Hine Raumati. We're still vibing Hine Raumati, yeah.
Yeah, the Northern Hemisphere Christmas shopping conspiracy foisted upon us at this time.
Yeah, it's such a shame, really, that has happened. And that we participate in it unwillingly, and then some days we have willingness to spend every to break the bank balance to do so, because we feel a sense of anxiety.
Yeah,
it's quite there's a lot of anxiety around. Oh, I bought for this one, therefore I should buy for this one. Well, if you can bring that back to the original gift of giving, the koha, sending out goodness to each other, making things is always a very beautiful way of also thinking about somebody, if that's something that you want to do, but buying is a whole nother rhythm, to buy and then give. Is being mindful of what those gifts are, and consciously understanding how that exchange is happening, because we're pretty much overdosed on this. What was that words again? The
shopping conspiracy.
The shopping conspiracy.
Yeah, we just made this phrase up before the start of the show. as I said at the start, it's a conspiracy without a conspirator, without anyone. No one really wants to be part of it. The only thing that pulls us into, I guess, is the little kids when they get a present and the delight on their face.
Oh, we can't.
I think that's the thing that keeps pulling us back in. And
And there's that experience of passing a few vegetables over the fence to your neighbour.
Mm.
Where did we lose that practice? I mean, it happened for us recently because we've got the new beautiful neighbours. And they basically said, oh, do you want, this and this? And of course we said, yes. And, and there's nothing more like that I can see in my mind when I think about it. I said, wow, that's amazing. That's beautiful. You pass a few veggies over the fence, or you just pop them in the letterbox for your neighbour.
Mm.
Maybe that's a satisfying feeling for yourself. But what about those who receive it? Just imagine them picking them out of the letterbox or receiving that things that are grown by you in your just over the fence, those fences. Yeah.
Hey, it's probably time for us to wrap up.
Yes.
This is our last interview for the year, and I'm going to have like a month off the air.
Yeah, we've got to do that,
for the next little while. So thank you for coming in regularly. And your offerings and your different perspective from my other guests, my other regular guests.
Thank you. Thank you for prompting me and giving me this opportunity. Next year, a whole story is unfolding around a rongoā clinic that I'll know more about, but I've been invited to be part of that down at the Kōkiri.
Mm. That does sound interesting.
Yeah, it will be. It will be. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah.
So that we can, have this opportunity to have it more available for us in this community hapuri. So, yeah, thank you very much for prompting me with your questions throughout the year.
Yeah.
It's been amazing.